Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Stand by for news. I'm Tom Rowe in Anchor, and you've tuned in the WGXC Morning Show, and we'll have an interview today on the WGXC Morning Show with State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, with Mark Dunley from WOOC, talking about the state's renewable energy policy. Also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather, the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. Stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
Wow, it's hot here in the Love Shack. You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Wave Farms Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Acra broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wave Farms' International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farms' art park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you'll do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nancy Barber and Bill Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, August 4th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Meg Britton Meshick reports in the Berkshire Eagle that after a drought, floods, smoke, heat, and spongy moss this summer, Pittsfield has two documented cases of mosquitoes carrying West Nile virus in recent weeks. And members of the city's Board of Health want to spray pesticides to reduce the population of mosquitoes, but the city council voted in 2021 to stop allowing truck-mounted spraying to control mosquitoes. Chris Horton, director of the Berkshire Mosquito Control Project, said the July flooding led to many more mosquitoes. Horton said, quote, "We're still doing larval control everywhere, but when the Housatonic River flooded, we couldn't even have access to the area, and the mosquitoes were already coming off. The water was too deep to even go through and put the larvicide in," unquote. The Board of Health is now asking the Pittsfield City Council to meet on the mosquito issue. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Brian Campbell reports at New York State of Politics that on August 3rd, Governor Kathy Hochul announced $12 million for scientific ideas on electric vehicles as New York transitions away from polluting fossil fuels. The money for the development and demonstration of innovative, replicable solutions that advance electric vehicle adoption and the integration of electric vehicles with the electric grid and for better hydrogen fuel cell technologies. Hochul said, quote, as New York continues to advance toward a zero-emission future, it's imperative that we continue to improve the affordability of clean transportation ownership as we scale up a resilient and reliable energy grid. This $12 million initiative offers an innovative way to do both, exploring and supporting options for vehicle charging infrastructure that also provides energy back to the grid. We are committed to making it possible for both residents and companies to transition to owning and charging electric vehicles, building a greener future for all, unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And Ben Mitchell reports for News 10 in Albany that New York's Department of Environmental Conservation hosts the 12th annual Great Hudson River Estuary Fish Count on August 5th at sites along the Hudson River Estuary. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago said, quote, the annual fish count event provides a great opportunity for New Yorkers and visitors to get outdoors or go online and learn about the many fish species that live and thrive in the Hudson River. With sites from New York Harbor to Cohoes, there are many places for young and old alike to participate in this year's event, unquote. Seine nets, minnow traps, rods, and reels are used to catch fish that are counted and released. The state has set up the Great Hudson River Estuary Fish Count website for more information, and you can read more about this story at News 10 in Albany, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, August 4th. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Tannersville to 67 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 69 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be still hanging out at medium. Today will be rainy with a high of 79 degrees at 3 p.m. The afternoon gets stormy and dies down after dark and comes to an end by midnight. We will see a low of 61. Tomorrow will be warm, dry, and sunny with a high of 82. It should feel pretty nice because the dew points will be in the 50s, keeping it from feeling too humid. Overnight, we get 58 degrees, and that takes us into a very similar Sunday with a high of 83, still dry and sunny. Monday, rain comes back and gives us a high of 82. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 5:30 a.m., low tide at 12:18 a.m. High tide comes back at 6:09 p.m. and that's it. And those times are for Hudson. Today's river temperature will be 76 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 7:59 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:48 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 343 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are no chances of aurora. The current sunspot number is 124. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady. Oh, who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall, who listens to radio? Only 150 million.
Donald Trump is the first ever former president to be arraigned on federal charges, but he's also facing several other legal cases.
It's kind of hard to keep track given that there are so many different investigations and so much legal hot water that Trump is in. But there are 4 primary criminal cases or investigations. There's the indictment in New York stemming from hush money payments to a porn star and Trump's alleged attempts to falsify business records. There's, of course, the recent indictment that just came down in Florida. This is a federal charge, and it relates to Trump's retention of classified documents after he left the White House, and then his attempts to obstruct the government's efforts to recover those documents, and Trump's efforts to undermine the 2020 election results and derail the transfer of power on January 6th.
It's a beautiful day for the race.
Efforts to undermine the 2020 election results.
Is the favored today?
Hush money payments.
Is in there.
Derail the transfer of power.
It is 3-1 and at 20-1.
The obstruction of justice.
Now the horses are approaching the starting gate and there they go!
Falsified business records.
Going to the front.
Conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding.
Just second on the rail.
Georgia election interference.
Just third by a length. And
obstruction of justice.
Around the first turn.
Falsified business records.
Is still in front.
Obstruction of and attempt to obstruct an official proceeding.
Just second by a head.
Conspiracy against rights.
Is third. And
obstruction of justice.
Into the back stretch.
Efforts to undermine the 2020 election results.
Now leading the pack.
Conspiracy to defraud the United States.
A second, very close.
Hush money payments.
Is coming up through the butt. And
obstruction of justice.
At the half.
Efforts to undermine the 2020 election results.
Still out in front.
Conspiracy against rights.
A second with plenty of room.
Derail the transfer of power.
Is passing.
Conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding.
Retention of classified documents.
Is fourth and in last place by 10 lengths. I believe it is. Yes, it is.
Obstruction of justice.
Around a turn, heading for home. It's
obstruction of and attempt to obstruct an official proceeding.
The stretch.
Retention of classified documents.
Is third. And
derail the transfer of power.
In the rear. Oh, oh, oh. And now they come down to the wire. And it's number one. And now number two. And it's very close. It'll either be a photo finish or an oil painting. And now Lewis leads with the left. And Lewis is in there slugging. And it's a battle. And now they're tearing hair. There's hair all over the ring. There's hair all over the place. I don't know whose hair it is. It's mine. And there goes the winner!
Obstruction of justice.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
In these indictments, the justice system is working as it should.
Lisa Gilbert with the nonprofit consumer advocacy organization Public Citizen said in order to protect the integrity of the United States democracy, it's essential that former President Donald Trump's case proceed like any other. In his latest indictment, Trump is being charged in connection with his alleged attempts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. On Thursday, Trump pleaded not guilty to all charges, and his lawyer claims the indictment is a form of election interference.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
Trump will be in court again on August 28th. In the 45-page indictment, the Department of Justice alleges Trump led a dishonest and fraudulent effort to stay in power after losing the presidential election to Joe Biden in 2020. On Wednesday, former Attorney General Bill Barr appeared on CNN and said he sees no legal issues with the indictment and doesn't see the move as an abuse of power by the DOJ.
Department of Justice is not acting to weaponize the department by proceeding against the president for a conspiracy to subvert the electoral process.
Advocates for clean elections in Maine are gearing up for a November ballot referendum that would ban foreign government spending in state elections. The Maine legislature recently passed a bill to enact a ban, but it was vetoed by Governor Janet Mills, who said the bill's language raised First Amendment concerns. Caitlin LaCaze with Protect Maine Elections says the ban makes sense to voters.
Our opponents will have tens of millions of dollars.
Companies from Canada and Spain are already spending some of that money on statewide TV ads opposing a public takeover of two New England-based power companies. On Thursday, Fitch Ratings, a credit rating agency, downgraded the United States' credit rating in part due to how the federal government handled the debt crisis approximately 2 months ago. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen called the move unwarranted.
Fitch's decision is puzzling in light of the economic strength we see in the United States.
Yellen said Fitch's move does not change what already is known. She said Treasury securities remain the world's preeminent safe and liquid asset, and that the American economy is fundamentally strong. Finally, Florida has now effectively banned advanced placement psychology classes. The College Board said it's due to the course's content on sexual orientation and gender identity. The state's Department of Education notified the College Board that the AP course is in violation of state law. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRS indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. We're back in Alabama today, where civil rights groups go back to federal district court to oppose the legislature's defiant, racially gerrymandered congressional voting district map. The U.S. Supreme Court's Allen v. Milligan decision made clear that to be in compliance with Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, Alabama should create a map with two majority-minority districts. The state has seven congressional districts and is almost 27% African American, but has only one majority black district. The legislature refused, again creating one barely majority black district at 50.65%, and another district, which the overwhelmingly white majority legislature calls an opportunity district, at 40%. During the Milligan case, experts proposed a map with two majority black districts, which the legislature chose to ignore. A complaint filed July 28th by plaintiffs begins with the words, "Alabama is in open defiance of the federal courts," and they ask, quote, that the court enjoin Alabama's proposed plan as a plainly insufficient remedy and proceed to a court-driven remedial process to ensure plaintiffs obtain relief in time for the 2024 election. The remedial process would likely be a court-appointed special master to draw a compliant map. The complaint will be heard August 14th in U.S. District Court in Birmingham. We have a link to the full complaint at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at Mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, and his office recently put out a report, Renewable Electricity in New York State. And it largely analyzes the ability of New York State to meet some of the renewable energy goals with respect to the recent climate law that was passed, the CLCPA. So, Mr. DiNapoli, what was your assessment? How is New York going to be doing and meeting its renewable energy goals?
Mark, first of all, it's great to have this important conversation with you, and I certainly appreciate your advocacy on these issues over many years. And we really wanted to just give an update for New Yorkers as to where we're at, because New York does have very ambitious goals, as you point out, under the CLCPA, a very important piece of legislation. And what we find in reviewing where we're at right now is that the goals are achievable, are attainable, but we really have to redouble our efforts if, in fact, we're going to meet the goals that are stated by the year 2030. So we really wanted to give this as kind of a marker, if you will, as to where the state's at and how much more progress we still have to make if we're going to meet those goals.
Now, the report actually goes back a little bit towards, 2004, George Pataki, Governor Pataki, had set goals of trying to get to 30% renewable energy by 2015, basically starting with a large base of hydroelectric. State did not come to those goals. What are some of the impediments that the report identified as to why, you know, renewable energy doesn't develop as quickly as, say, state officials wanted to?
You know, and I think you raise an important point that it's not like we haven't had goals in the past. We've been ramping up those goals. But when you look at that history, you know, as you appropriately point out, what we see are challenges that I think still exist, some inconsistency in terms of funding that's available to support the expanded projects that were proposed, preliminarily approved, seem to be coming online, and then for various reasons were canceled. And then I guess a third area would be just the whole permitting process. which gets to, you know, the bureaucracy, which is important to ensure accountability, but sometimes results in delays. And the issue of making sure that there's the appropriate interconnection. And there's another process, you know, involving the ISO in that regard as well. So there really been a combination of factors that have just resulted in the fact that it's taken us a lot longer to get the kind of generation and capacity online. And we really need to figure out how to make that whole process be more efficient if we're going to meet those goals.
Now, I have a sort of a two-part question. The report does cite concerns, both inconsistency in funding, but recently we've heard a lot of the renewable energies, particularly offshore wind, talk about the need for cost increases, partly due to inflation, partly due to supply chain issues. But your report also points out that most of the renewable energy in New York State, in terms of state funding, is coming out of utility surcharges on utility bills, which is more regressive. Low-income people spend more of their income. So how do we deal with this cost increase issue, and do you have any suggestions as to a fairer method of trying to fund some of these projects?
You know, I think that's a very important issue, and again, part of why we want this report, because I think the general public needs to be made aware. You know, ultimately, it's the ratepayers that are going to bear much of this cost. So it underscores, you know, kind of a theme that we always talk about at the controls office, the importance of transparency. And I think there hasn't been enough understanding in that regard. You know, the state, through legislative action, through some of the programs with NYSERDA and the PSC, they have provided some options for lower income people to have an opportunity to have a reduction in their utility bills. But, you know, I think we need to just have a broader discussion of that. So our report didn't necessarily get into new specific proposals, but we certainly flagged this as an area that I think, you know, again, working between the PSC particularly and the legislature, we need to come up with a strategy that doesn't create an undue burden on families of lower income. Because, again, the utility ratepayers are the ones that ultimately are going to bear much of the cost for this transition.
Now, there have been various proposals, particularly by Senator Krueger, chair of the Senate Finance Committee, various things on Make Polluters Pay, Climate Superfund Act. I know Nyberg's big in support of it. You know, do you think the state should look at ways that some of the, oh, you know, the Exxons and the Chevrons in the world should be kicking in more money for some of this transition cost?
I haven't endorsed any of the specific proposals, but I do think they merit serious consideration. Senator Krueger is always a thought leader in our state. You know, her proposal, whether that goes too far, I'm not going to weigh in on that at this point, but I think it's worthy of serious discussion. You know, certainly we see in more recent times, some of those companies that you identified are making quite a lot of profit these days. So I don't think that's an unreasonable place for us to start to look. How you structure that, and you get to that question of reasonableness, that, you know, I'll leave that to my colleagues in the legislature to, you know, figure that part out. But I do think we need to look at some additional funding sources and not have it just be on the backs of ratepayers, which, for, as you know, Mark, for various reasons are under tremendous stress and pressure already.
One of the issues that the New York State Legislature and the governor, as part of this year's budget, did do was pass something they call the Build Public Renewables Act, basically give authorization to the New York Power Authority to build renewable energy, but they had the caveat that various state agencies like NYSERDA and PSE would have to determine that the private sector is not going to be able by itself to meet the renewable energy goals set out in the CLCPA. Based on your analysis, is there room now for NYPER to step in and begin to build more renewable energy?
You know, we didn't drill down on that in this particular report, but I do think that that action was appropriate. So I'm hoping that there will be opportunities for NYPA to play a more significant role. Obviously, I think they've got a pretty good track record, and they were set up, you know, with this purpose. And, you know, when you look at the whole renewables question in New York, as you know, and as our report reminded everybody, the reality is so far it still has been very much related to hydropower, and it's very clear that we need to do more as far as wind and solar. And again, I think this is an area where we need all hands on deck. And I would hope that NYPA, in fact, could play a role in this regard. And you know, another way to look at it, Mark, is the fact that this opportunity has been created for NYPA to play a larger role. Maybe that will be a little bit of a an incentive for other players in the private sector to step up their game as well.
Let me ask you a two-part question. One is, you mentioned siting and also transmission grid interconnection problems. You do make some recommendations. You know, what do you think the state, you know, could do to speed up the actual moving from we approved this project to the project coming online? And second, are there other things that you guys are working on in controllers office and climate that you'd like to share with people?
You know, certainly the state setting up through the Department of State, the Office of Renewable Energy Siting, I think was an important step to try to have a faster process. The ISO also has been trying to speed up its timeline, because compared to ISOs in other parts of the country, New York has tended to take a bit longer. So I think those are positive steps. I think also we need to keep the public engaged in the conversation, because, you know, Mark, what often happens is, you know, everybody's for meeting ambitious climate goals, and, you know, and then when a project is sited in their neighborhood, folks say, well, no, we like the idea, but not here. I just think we need a little more public knowledge about the fact that we all need to contribute, and more openness so that there could be a serious discussion and hopefully resolve some of these local issues that end up sidetracking some of these proposals. We are also working on the audit side. We also have an audit underway of the Public Service Commission in terms of their role in meeting these goals. And of course, as you know, we continue to have a climate action plan with regard to working to decarbonize our portfolio with regard to the pension funds. From our perspective, we think the climate issue is a serious issue. And certainly you look at the weather events just this summer that we're seeing in our own state and across the country, it really is an emergency situation. And we want New York to be part of the global consensus that we have to realize the goals of the Paris Agreement. That's why this has been an important focus area for us. And again, why I appreciate your very strong advocacy on these issues for a very long time. We need more strong advocates like you to just remind everybody this has got to be a number one priority for us all in New York and beyond.
So we've been talking with Thomas DiNapoli, the New York State Controller. They just put out a report, Renewable Electricity in New York State. You can find it on the Office of State Controller website. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Here's your former rock critic for Newsweek, New York Times, Spin Magazine.
More importantly, former programmer for WGXC.
Well, most importantly,
right.
I would say.
Right.
Someday she'll come back.
Always a party.
Yeah.
That's right.
And more importantly, I mean, we could keep going more importantly to a performer in like a zillion bands
like
whatever.
Listen, she's a serial creative.
There you go.
Because I'm a serial entrepreneur.
I love that.
She's a serial creative. Because you're not just on music. You're also written. You're also
write the poetry.
Vocal. Like, you're all the things.
You're all
I
the
make
thing.
Videos, too.
You make,
oh, my
God!
I'm not that good, but I make them.
No, that's great.
You know what I am, right? A serial sleeper.
Well,
anyway,
you're a serial reader.
I was going to say a serial eater, but
running
I actually
of
don't
the
eat.
Town. I'm a serial Hudson slap into shaper.
Yeah. So Karen's back.
Hey, you guys.
Hey.
Hey, Karen.
To talk once again. Uh-oh.
The lake needs a lawyer.
The lake needs a lawyer group who are trying to prevent
still
this.
Still needs it.
Oh, no.
What?
Still needs it.
Oh, still needs it.
Still needs that lawyer.
Still needs that lawyer.
Still working it. You know, it's a long, slow process.
Right. Let's go back to the beginning, because they may not have heard you last time you were here.
Yeah. Everybody may not be fully informed on this topic. Incredibly.
Or listen to our show every single week.
Thanks for having me on, you guys. It's
please,
so nice
it's
to
a pleasure.
See you.
No. It's actually was exciting to hear that you were coming in to give us a new update, because I tell people everywhere I go, you know, and I'm like, have you been to film? Yeah. Do you know about the lake needs a lawyer? What? And I just start giving it to him.
Thank you so much. And are we allowed to? You're like running for office, right?
I am.
Are we allowed to talk about that?
Well, we'll be able to talk about it on other people's shows. But Tom and I'll be off the air beginning August 24th is our last show.
What? Tears.
I mean, he doesn't have to campaign, so I don't.
Now there's still a possibility of a write-in.
Yeah.
Don't you dare.
So you have to be off the air so that you can do
until
your political
November.
Thing and not have any.
But anyway.
So Summit Lake in Philmont, created when
the dam was built in the 1840s, all these old mills, mill town, big industrial town, mills shut down. Anyway, there's this beautiful hill behind the lake. I'm all, you know, pumped up on Moto Coffee.
Really?
You wear a supernatural shirt,
though.
I know. I
that's good.
I love it.
You spread it around. That's the way it should be.
That's right.
I got here at 4. I missed it. I don't have a Moto shirt. Okay. Anyway, so a developer wants to build 16 houses on 22 acres on the hillside behind the lake. And the town planning board twice now has approved it without an environmental impact statement.
So when you were
actually,
here last
it's been
time,
more than twice, but with right. this developer, it's been twice. The town's been trying to get houses on this piece of land back into the right. 90s. Uh-huh. And all efforts have met with huge community resistance, and all efforts have failed for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that the town, most people in the town don't want housing there.
Right. So the first, you got a second chance because they didn't do the environmental review the first time, correct?
That's
they passed
right.
it or something.
They, okay, this was last August. Mm-hmm. They approved it. It was a year ago today, August 3rd, 2022. Yeah. Planning board approved it. Summit Lake Conservation Group formed for the purpose of protecting the environment in Philmont, specifically this area of Summit Lake. Mm-hmm. And we filed an Article 78 lawsuit asking the judge in Supreme Court, Columbia County Supreme Court, to reverse the approval.
And we did.
We won.
Right.
That approval went through. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, okay.
That approval was thrown out in January. The developer came back with almost an identical proposal, some slightly different things, and our lawyer believes that when an approval gets thrown out, you're supposed to go
start
back
over.
To the beginning
right.
under State Environmental wow. Quality Review Act.
Because something's
and
changed.
And we brought all the...
For those,
they changed.
For the cognoscenti, that seeker, you might know.
Yeah. So, did they do that? No.
No.
They just approved it again, despite...
Unbelievable.
And in the meantime, our group was bringing all this new information in, that bald eagles are there. If they're not nesting on this particular piece of property, they're there daily, multiple generations, lots of wildlife. There are endangered bat species that could be displaced mm-hmm. by building there. There's all kinds of environmental reasons to do an impact statement. And one more reason is that there have been several studies done about the health of the lake. And silt is building up in Summit Lake. And one reason silt is building up is climate change. Mm. Mm. So stronger storms bringing more runoff from the Agawamuck Creek into that lake. It gets stuck because the dam is there. Mm-hmm. So silt is building up. Another reason, now I'm seeing this, I am not firsthand knowledge of this, but the Taconic Parkway changed its drainage about 15 years ago.
Oh.
And it went from having sort of wetland holding ponds mm-hmm. that would filter runoff to just having like a concrete
culvert type of thing.
Yeah. And so the water
had to go somewhere.
Just is eroding the banks of the creek and bringing all that silt in. So the town knows this because the town has all of these studies on its website, and none of this has been paid attention to.
Meanwhile,
terrible.
The houses presumably would even cause more runoff because
you're going to tear right. down hundreds
of
trees.
And yep. And here's my concern that I remember specifically when you came, I think it was the last time, which to me was a huge, a larger impact for the community of Philmont, was the fact that the fire and DPW supports would not be enough to support the sustainability of 16 more homes being built on such narrow roads.
So that, I'm going to sort of try to tease that out a little bit. So okay. the capacity for like water and sewer is there. What this developer did was design a one-way 12-foot wide road through this development. And because it's a very steep hill.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you think about 12 feet.
Don't worry. That's just.
12 feet. That's like a driveway.
I won't say it. Your mother said your middle name last week. You know that.
Lies.
Sorry, we were interrupted by a certain gentleman.
All right, there's more important.
Sorry. Oh my God. Sorry.
Do you need the microphone? I can get up.
If you want to find out my mom's middle name, you
might
Okay.
Don't touch it, Tom.
I can't wait for that. Bye, Cruz. Bye, Cruz Vincent.
Bye.
He hates his middle name.
Why?
My grandfather's name. He's supposed to be named Vincent Cruz, but then my ex-husband decided to say he pulled rank. He said, I think my grandfather died first. You know, the nature of humans.
Yeah. Anyway, back to your narrative.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so there's this 12-foot road through this development, which, okay, like, sorry, but a fire, or even worse, I'm sorry, but like...
EMS,
active shooter, whatever it is. Think about it. An Amazon truck, like 12 feet, you start getting like two, three, four mutual aid vehicles in there. Where are they going to go? And,
yeah, and by the way, a seeker, an environmental impact statement would also include that. It should include that. It does.
Right.
I know
you
locally
probably
here.
Know yeah. a lot about yeah. how, because I only know how it works when it's not working.
Right.
Right.
With this right. particular thing.
Right.
But
no, the moment you see something like that, you said, okay, we need a traffic study or some kind of study.
Some kind of something. Thank you so much, Tom. We need some kind of something. And I'm sorry, I live in Philmont. I like my neighbors. But how the planning board is just trying to get this through is really disturbing. And for me right now, given what we're going through this summer,
right.
I mean, I know everybody's like, woo, it's like not like horribly humid today.
No, it's terrible. The whole summer's
been.
The
rest of it was pretty
We hard. Are really aware right. of like what's happening. Right. So for us, it's important to tie in our little community climate change to this kind of action where you're going to take down hundreds of trees, which there's also a nature trail in there right now. So if you live on Main Street in Philmont, you can go be like, I walk on this trail all the time. You go under these trees. It's like 10 or 15 degrees cooler immediately. Wow. So this is like...
Does Philmont have other developable spaces? I mean, is this like... Are they that desperate to sell this? Well, they
is
sold
it landlocked? Is there another way that they could access, put another road in on another side maybe?
No, they can't because of the topography. Mm-hmm. And
such
on
a
the,
good word.
On the other side, thank you so much. If it's got four or five syllables, I like it. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. On the other side is the Harlem Valley Rail Trail.
I see.
So there's these are, and on the other side is High Falls Conservation Area.
Right.
So really, it's this piece of land which
should have been protected a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a natural for a natural
Amazing.
Area.
Well, so. I would think your lawyer wouldn't. I mean, it's going to be the same Article 78, more or less, right?
Okay. So actually, so we the planning board approved it again in April. We filed a second Article 78 lawsuit in May.
For those who don't know, Article 78 is the way you challenge any municipal action, and the key term is arbitrary and capricious. That's what you have to sort of demonstrate.
Yep.
Yes.
And so I feel like we have filed a much longer
right.
petition that is asking for an EIS, talking about community character, because one unfortunate aspect of what these developers are giving us is a bunch of houses that people in Philmont, being a low-income community, these are houses that are going to be like $750,000 at minimum.
Jeez.
Up to over a million. So it's going to change the character of the town. And, you know, it's not that I don't think there should be nice houses in Philmont, but there's all kinds of housing that could be
right.
renovated, redeveloped. There's
Meanwhile,
empty lots.
If I'm not mistaken, Philmont just got a grant.
A housing grant.
$50,000. Right.
Yeah. I mean, we did. Like,
congratulations.
Yeah. And don't
Listen,
let them,
that, don't let that go over your head, folks.
Right. And don't
Town
let
should
that
be doing
be,
that.
Don't let that become the excuse for, you know, putting forth these houses, because that's not what it's about.
It's
that's
two
not
separate
what,
things.
Yeah.
And, you know, also, let's just be clear on the history of Philmont. Philmont has very big mansion-esque type homes. They're not shy in a way. They're not like, you know, like, oh, we don't want that here. Yeah. That's already been
the
mainstay of Philmont going back, you know, when it was in its heyday.
Yeah. So like the Harder Mansions, there's like at least two Harder Mansions, which are these big, beautiful, like Victorian era homes. There's beautiful houses on Maple Avenue. Mm-hmm. Like,
they're all over.
Just gorgeous Victorian homes. Yeah. I mean, it's, I just think that there are people that are going to be impacted if you're a renter in Philmont. It is one of the last, like, borderline affordable places to live in Columbia County. So if tax base goes up, taxes go up, prices start going up, it's like more people that we're pushing out of our community, and it doesn't feel good. You know?
Is that it there?
It hasn't felt good in Hudson, that's for
sure.
That's
it, yeah. That's Summit Lake.
And where is the property that's going to... We're on the... I had to pull up the topography, guys, because...
Yeah, I'm sure you can all appreciate since we're on radio.
So this, it's in here. Okay. So there's a 125-foot barrier, like village owns land exactly on the lakeside, on the shoreline, and then beyond it is where this development would go. So it's like right in here.
And the road for that would be here?
It's going to come off Summit Avenue, which is you have to get rid of that little box there. Okay. This is Summit right here, I think. Summit Street.
Yep.
So it's in here. It's like in here. And the road would come in like in here. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
So what's the next step? You need more money?
We do. we really do. We have a page on GiveButter, which is a GoFundMe styles platform. But GiveButter is
doesn't have fees, right?
There is a small fee, but it's kind of nonprofit oriented. So our site is called The Lake Needs a Lawyer on GiveButter. You can also go to summitlakeconservation.com. That's our website.
That's great.
See like more info there.
Sure.
So donations toward our legal fees, should I just say that our legal fees are like into the tens of thousands of dollars?
Right.
We've raised $15,000 so far. We have a commitment from the Mid-Hudson Group of the Sierra Club.
They want
to provide some funding for us, and they are aware of our fight and supporting it and feel that that what we're doing is in the spirit of the Sierra Club, which means lot to me as someone who like has read John Muir and knows what the Sierra Club is. Not everybody does.
Yeah. I've donated to the Sierra Club, and I've actually waived the free bag or whatever it is, because I feel like a donation shouldn't give me something back. If I'm donating. Let me donate to the wildlife, to the animals.
Oh, come on. You love swag.
I do, but not that kind.
Okay.
They do a lot of advocacy.
Yeah.
And I'm now kind of involved with the Mid-Hudson Group also, and am seeing sort of how common this is right now in our area.
Do you know how much they paid for the land, the developers?
They paid, I think, $170,000.
So is it possible at some point to find some land conservancy that might pay them off and get rid of them?
That would be a dream.
And I make a personal plea to the developers, if you hear me, be heroes. Put this land into conservation. Take the tax write-off. Put your name on it for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Clover Reach Conservation Area. Like, this is what I think would be the right thing to do.
Right.
Take that tax write-off. Go build housing, nice housing, where somebody's not going to be so upset about it. The previous developer went timed out on their approval.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to build more units. They wanted something like 59 units or something. And so when they timed out, they priced the land at something like $680,000. So for years, like 8 years ago, there were attempts to bring in the CLC and buy the land, but it was like totally unfeasible.
Oh, it was priced at $680. So they
and then the price slowly came down, and by that point, like
it was up for grabs.
Yep.
Two questions.
Yeah.
How does eminent domain play a part, if at all? And secondly, what can so I know that there are probably a lot of people listening, and like Tom is on a town board, I'm trying to become on a town board, and you're dealing with a town board.
Mm-hmm.
What are things that people locally who are on boards or thinking of running can do to educate themselves? Because I feel like a part of the problem here is that the town board or planning board that's sitting was not properly educated. Now, I don't know if it behooves them to do it independently or if this is something that should be a call that's added on to their job description is you need to get this training, you need to get this education.
Well, it's funny you mention that because in the city of Hudson, to be on the planning board, you have to have 4 hours of training every year, which it doesn't sound like a lot, but at least explains to you SEAKER.
Right.
The short environmental whatever. What does it stand for again? I can never remember.
State Environmental Quality Review Act.
Right.
Yep.
And it's basically a seminar in that in order to be on the board. Now, I don't know if your town requires that or not, and that's often a problem. You do need a minimum of knowledge.
You need some.
Yeah, you need some.
So I will say that I just think that ideologically the majority of our planning board, not our whole planning board, but the majority of it is just like pro-development
right.
and wants this
right.
to go in. So it's not a question of education. Right. Although I do think that the fact that we won the first lawsuit and I think our case is really strong the second time around shows that at the very least the town is getting questionable legal advice. The planning
exactly.
board is
and
getting questionable legal.
And by the way, they're paying for that.
Yeah.
So it's costing the town money.
Which they don't
right.
really have.
Which they don't really
that's
have.
That's right.
To
fight yes, it.
To fight it, yeah.
Yep. And I stood up at a trustee meeting in February or January, and I was like, hey, we just won our lawsuit. What are you going to do so that I don't have to sue you again?
There we go.
And unfortunately, our mayor, Brian Johnson said, let the courts figure it out.
Yeah.
Mm. Sorry to hear.
So, yeah. You know, just like they want it to go in.
Yeah.
We don't. We're trying to fight it.
Could they say at this point after the first win that you've received that they decided to not continue and just deny them? If they denied them,
they could, right?
Well, if we win the lawsuit the second time, it's hard for me to see how they could
go forward.
Do it without an environmental impact statement. So at that point, we hope that the planning board will issue a positive declaration mm-hmm. of environmental impact, and it becomes on the developers
to do
this series of studies
right.
and
it's
to
serious.
Start mitigating or changing the impacts that
That's
it's
right.
going to have.
And they have to, I mean, it costs money, and of course they don't want to do that, anything. But they're already in with all these soft costs anyway, and it's crazy. It's just,
you know, the question I have is even going back to the Taconic's build, like where was the oversight there? Where was the SEAKER? Like if you go back and you look, I mean, it's too late now, but Jesus, like even something like that.
I know, I feel that way too, and it's like New York State is doing that over here and now doing this over. It's like a transportation department mm-hmm. is doing one thing and now and it, like the DEC is having to let you know
yeah.
it's a
never know.
Conflict.
And you know, I think some of it comes from the top down. I mean, I'll go back to my own my wife's experience working for the SEC, the Security Exchange Commission. If you don't have a strong leader involved, either at the regional level or at the Washington level, federal level, nothing gets done. You know what I mean? There's a kind of ethos that evolves with each leader.
Yeah.
Whether to press these things or just kind of like, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Roll over.
Yeah, roll over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yep.
Don't go forward. So you can never, you know, the agencies don't always work together. And that's one of the horrible things about government, even on the local level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that's been good here in Hudson is that we have a lot of communication between the different realms, you know, which didn't happen before. People were doing one thing, somebody doing the same thing, and it was redundant. You
That's
know, that
great.
Kind of thing. So,
I was thinking, like, it might be if I could draw, like, a hypothetical. If this were in Hudson, like, it's just sort of hard to imagine. Like, if you had, like, a 35 acre nature preserve. That was two blocks off Warren Street that people could go have, like,
walks and then end up on a dock on a lake.
We have
and fish and like kayak and stuff. And then if somebody was just like, oh, but we're going to tear down several hundred trees and put like expensive housing in, like it's
in
impossible.
Hudson, in Hudson, we have a wetlands that's privately owned that people are insisting on.
You don't want the shanties? The shanties?
No. The South Bay, which is owned by Colarusso, and you know, it's been a battle about the nature preserve. I mean, it's not a preserve, but about the nature there. So, in fact, we have...
Is that the wetland between, like, the loading dock and 3rd Street?
Yeah. I mean, they have they own the property, and there's existing road there.
Yeah.
But some of the people who are against expanding it are using the environmental argument, because there definitely is a lot of impacted nature in there. So it's been... You know, goes on and on. But my point is, it's not even something ordinary people can access, and yet people have been very active about it.
It's really tricky because our natural areas are so beleaguered and fractured, and habitats are shrinking, and it's causing like species collapses. Yeah. You know, it's like people know that there's fewer birds around. I heard Larry Fetterman of Ramshorn Livingston on WGXC this morning, and he was like, I know there's fewer birds. Yeah. Like we're all experiencing this, and yet we can't kind of make this connection with our own sort of social agenda as being what is creating this loss that we're...
So I had an epiphany today. I was in the backyard, you know.
You were outside of your house?
Yes, on a rare occasion.
Shocker.
And, you know, my wife put in this incredible garden in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've always been like, you know, yeah, it's nice. It looks pretty. But today I was out there and I noticed a ton of bees, big fat bees. And I'm thinking,
pollinators.
Why don't you take my punchline away?
Sorry. It took you forever to get there.
I was trying to tell a story.
I'm floating along. I'm just picturing all the bees. I'm picturing the garden.
And I suddenly said, pollinator. This is a pollinating garden. And this is like what we have to have more of, you know?
Because
that's how these things survive and thrive.
Yeah.
And I guess it was kind of an epiphany.
Yeah.
I mean, not
all
a
this time he thought his wife was just frivolous and ridiculous with all the expenses.
Oh,
now he sees the benefit. Now he sees the benefit.
Oh, I got to go. Whoa, I don't want to be in the middle of that one.
But, yeah, it's sort of true.
It is, you know, there's a certain amount of, like, living that we're doing here on the planet, in our even in our community. You know, obviously, like, we're here. But we don't have to continue in this kind of destructive path.
Right.
And so it feels good in a way to be fighting it, because it does feel like, you know, there's all this that you can't control. You know, it's 100 degrees in the Gulf of Mexico off the Florida Keys.
Karen, that's every day I wake, and I think of, you know, my involvement with local government is only because I know on the national level the things are things we can't control.
Exactly.
You know? I can't stop wars.
Exactly. That's
I can't
right,
create,
Tom.
You know, socialized medicine, the things that I really believe in nationally. But so you do what you do, you know, you can do.
Yep.
And that's why we have Karen on the show today, folks.
That's a fact.
To let you all know about this struggle going on over there in Philmont.
Oh, just 9 miles away in Philmont.
9 miles in Philmont.
It's like another world, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I know a lot of people who moved there.
It's a great community.
Yeah.
It's a really kind of amazing community.
Why don't you give the details again on how to contact your organization or your group.
So if you'd like to make a donation, you can go to GiveButter, I believe it's / The Lake Needs a Lawyer. But basically, you can go to summitlakeconservation.com, and there's links all over the place to make a donation to our legal fund.
So... where are you playing in the next? What's up?
Okay.
Music-wise, come on.
Yeah. So Sky Furrows played at the Avalon Lounge on June 30th. We had a really great show with Live Skull, a kind of important like 80s and 90s noise band.
Oh. Wicked.
And let's see. I think we're confirmed to play at the Avalon again in early December. And we're going to play in Holyoke in October. and we're playing Collar City Mushrooms in Troy, I think, in early. So no shows until October.
Okay.
Yeah.
CDs? Any new CDs?
The Skyfro's new album is getting pressed this month, so we're hoping to have copies of it, like, by the end of the year.
I want to know when's the first.
But it's on vinyl.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Vinyl.
When's the first poetry book coming out?
I that's a good question.
A little checkbook.
I don't know. Somebody needs to publish my stuff.
I'll send you a little link that I have for you. How do you do it on with Amazon? No money out of pocket.
Oh.
So it'll be on demand print.
I was just invited by Willie at Far West Press to contribute to an anthology that they're going to publish next year. So I should hopefully, if Willie likes what I gave him, because I just gave him to him, hopefully, like, there'll be a couple of Norman Douglas publishes through Far West.
Oh, is that who published his little
that's right.
short stories?
Yep.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yep.
Didn't read it yet, but
they're
I saw
local.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So
In fact, he's reading Friday night.
That's right, in Catskill.
What's that place? Hands on Main, right?
What is that? Is that the old like the place next to Magpie Books?
Oh,
is that
little cafe? Remember?
What's the name of it?
Yeah. I don't know exactly.
I know.
Hands on Main. I know my friend Louise Smith has her artwork up there.
Oh,
as
nice.
As does a fellow named Will McLeod. I don't know if you know who that is.
I don't.
They opened last week, and the artwork's still there. I'll be there for a while.
Nice.
And tomorrow night, wait, this Thursday? Yeah. Friday, I think it's Friday night. Maybe it's Saturday night. Research team, we have a huge group of people in the other room here who do all our research for us when we have a question.
Yeah.
Norman Douglas and somebody else or two are reading.
I think it's Andrew Amalek.
Yes, that was one of them.
Yes.
Who is that? Do you know that person?
He writes these like true crime books.
Oh.
I read with him and Norman at the Spotty Dog like a couple of months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
Yeah, I don't know. Where were you, Tom?
I don't know.
Come on. Yep.
Oh, I knew Norman was reading, and I didn't know there was three people.
I was holding that bill.
Cool.
I was the cream filling in that poetry sandwich that night between Norman and Andrew.
Got it.
You said his name was Norman Douglas?
Yep.
Not his last name.
Yeah, it is.
Norman.
The angry poet that always types up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his name.
His name is Douglas.
Yeah.
I thought it was something else.
Because his Instagram is No Man Does Less.
I thought it was different because of Rolling Ghost. Maybe he gave us a different name on there. Maybe it's a different government.
A different government, did you say?
Yeah. Like, you know, you have Tommy D here, but then Thomas at the, you know, like two different, you know.
Oh, I had multiple names.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Your AKAs.
They all kind of relate to each other.
They're AKAs. Yeah.
One of them's not like Phil.
Well, it could be. In Philly, you could be Phil.
Oh, I like that name.
There you go.
Yo, Phil.
In Philmont.
Right. In Philmont.
It's Tommont when Tom comes into town.
I haven't eaten over there in a long time. We used to go to Local 111. It's still thriving, right?
It is thriving. People are roaring about it.
And how about
it's delicious.
The pub? The pub is holding its own?
Pub is still there, yeah.
Pub's still there. They have a karaoke night, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hide from that particular, but I just had burger night at Local 111 a couple of weeks ago. It was really good.
They actually dedicate a night to burgers.
Well, there's a
I'm
night.
In awe.
There's a night that you can get a burger. Only
okay.
It's only Thursday.
Swoon was doing that for a while, but I think they stopped doing it.
That was
okay,
a great
burger.
We only
have one more minute to the news.
I think that's great
so
that
let's,
to have.
Thank
that.
You all so much.
Thank you for coming again,
Karen Schomer, folks.
Yeah, badass Karen Schomer,
performer. Poet, performer, former WGXC programmer, and advocate.
Environmental advocate.
Serial creator.
Thank you, WGXC, for all you do. I listen every day.
That's really? Awesome.
Yeah. I do.
Wow.
I do.
I wish I could
you know, the
say
problem
that.
With me is that I can't, when I listen, I don't want to leave the car then because I'm still in the middle of it. And it's like, damn it.
I commute to Athens three mornings a week at 7:30
in the morning.
Man, oh man, it's like the greatest hits are happening.
I go out around 8:30 because I have to bring crews in town for work, and I get to catch the.
So it's
Amy-